sitting on the table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect. Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Losers.
Lose.
Men.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall. I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good day to our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a global collection of musicians. I'm Jim Hutchings, joined by Brian Boqueza, and our special hosts, Jasmine Hintz and Derek Cornett, who are journalism students from the U of R. Today we have a very special program about the two Nigerian students who are facing deportation as a result of contravening rules of their student visas. We have a guest who is familiar. We're hoping for a second guest, and we'll see what happens there. And I'm going to ask Jasmine to introduce the guest that we have. Jasmine.
Thank you, Jim. This afternoon joining us is Joseph Brew. He is a sessional instructor at the University of Regina in political science, and he also teaches international studies. So welcome to the show, Joseph.
Thank you very much.
So how do you know these students?
I know Favour and Victoria because they have been my students in my class. In the international studies program at the University of Regina and in political science classes too.
So what kind of students are they?
They are very dedicated students. They have worked very hard, and they have achieved the best they can in their academic work. And they are also very upright or forthright students in the student community and also within the wider Regina community.
Have they been involved in community programs and or stuff with the University of Regina?
Mainly they have been involved in their academic work, and given that they are relatively new students in Regina, they may not be, you know, have known many things around, so they have focused mainly on their own academic work.
Okay, so yeah. Like, how long have these students been in Saskatchewan now?
Victoria Odu and Favour Amadi arrived in Regina in 2009 on a student visa, and they have been enrolled at the University of Regina since 2009.
Do you have any idea why they chose to come to Saskatchewan to study?
Well, generally speaking, the University of Regina, of course, and the universities in Saskatchewan are very renowned universities around the world. And in that context, they found this being the best universities they could come and study in. Basically, the good name that University of Regina has, and obviously the high level of high quality education that is offered by the university that made the these girls come over here. It might be important to note here that the University of Regina has a large number of students, international students, and particularly from Nigeria, where these students come from. There are close to over 200 students thereabouts at the University of Regina from Nigeria alone. And that means that the university is very famous in Nigeria, and especially because of its high quality education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so what did these girls use to study once they came here?
They have been enrolled in different courses, of course, but generally they have been in the Faculty of Arts. Victoria has majored in theater studies, and but they have done courses also in other areas, the elective courses and all that. Favour has also been a central, her studies have been very central in international studies area.
So how have they been enjoying their studies here, being as they're so far from home?
Well, it has been very good for them. They have been happy with their education. Obviously, by the fact that they come from abroad, there will always be that element of missing home, of course. But because they are here for a short period of time, they have found their studies to be very good. And they have done very well. They have succeeded year after year, and they have been very glad to be in Regina, in particular, a very welcoming community within the student community and the university administration and professors, and at the same time, the wider Regina community.
So they've been here for about 3 years now. What propelled them to get a job here in the city?
Well, first of all, their visa allows them to work for a given amount of time. So they can work either within the university or outside the university. But they also have some processes that they have, every international student has to go through. So one, their visa allows them to work. For sure. But again, there will be various motivations or issues that surrounds every student, because every student is different from one another. Let us first of all remember that these students come from a developing country, a poor country. And in large part, when students come from developing countries, they also see an opportunity of coming, of course, to study, but with the allowances they have that they can be able to work, they want to utilize that opportunity so that they can also, in one way or another, help also their families. Mm-hmm. In one way or another. Not in a big way, but, the much they can be able to do. So that could be a probable factor that also probably influenced their decision to look for work. At the same time, during weekends, they may not have a lot to do. It can be very monotonous to be in studies for 4 years, right? So obviously with the 20 hours that they're allowed to work or so, they can always utilize that time to sort of get engaged on something else. And again, during holidays, especially summer holidays, when they are not taking any courses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the girls can have jobs on campus, but where they ran into the issue was they got jobs at Walmart.
That's right.
And so can you explain then to the listeners how that then kind of unraveled into be such an issue for these girls? What troubles did they run into?
Well, I will try to though that may not be an area of my competence, but I can be able to illustrate in very briefly. The problem that these girls are facing at the moment is as a result of working outside campus, working at Walmart and with another company within Walmart. Now, normally the understanding is that they can be able to work on campus without what is called a work permit. But if they have to work outside campus, the international students need a work permit. Now, there are quite a number of rules that are involved in all those particular areas. So it's not something that you can come and get into work. And I think this is where these students did not relate very well, understand very well, that once you get your social insurance number, yes, you can work in campus without a work permit. But when it comes to seeking a job off campus, you need a work permit, and you need to apply for that. It is not as simple as that for an international student. You need really to understand, to read the documentation, probably have a lot of interaction, so that you can be able to understand that once you get your social insurance number, that does not validate you to work off campus, but you need that other document. And once they got the social insurance number, they thought they can be able to work on campus and off campus. And that is where the problem lies. Now, they noted that they, at some point of their working, while working in the organizations that they were serving, Walmart and another organization within Walmart, one of the students, I'm not sure exactly how she came to know, but she discussed those issues with some other people, and they asked her, do you have this document? She realized that she does not have it, and she stopped working. And I think she had only worked for as little as 10 days or thereabout. Stopped working immediately, and after some time, she was summoned by the authorities, by the government, and she was asked whether she had worked, and she said yes, she had worked, but she stopped because she came to know that she did not have a work permit, and so she stopped on her own. The other lady got to know that she did not have the necessary documentation to work off campus when the government agents went to see her at Walmart and found her when she was at the till. And it's at that time she was told that, she's under arrest, and she was told why. Basically, that's when she realized that, she needed a work permit, and she explained that.
Yeah, that must have been a really scary situation for her to be in. What was both of their reactions after this happened?
I think it was a shock, and they were particularly very remorseful. They were very sorry about what had happened. They expressed that if they knew that they needed those documentation, they would have obtained them, they would have sought them, or they would not have worked at all. So they were very sorry, and basically those who were implementing had to implement the decisions as per the law.
What actions did they take then once they realized they were in violation of their student visas and she was arrested? So then what happened next to the students? What actions did they take in regards to that?
I may not be very, I don't know the flow of the process from that point in time.
Mm-hmm. More so from the girls' point, not so much the legal side, but what did the girls do then?
Well, I think to the best level of my understanding, they sort of sought to know what they needed to do. My understanding is that they did some, they requested for hearing and went through the whole process of, asking the government to consider their situation. So they did whatever they thought was best for them at that point in time, and sought that they be allowed to continue with their studies. Given the fact that they were already in their third year, so it was a very short time remaining for them to finish their studies, and therefore for them to be ordered to leave the country and go back to Nigeria for about 1 year, it would mean a whole year wasted in large part. And by that time, they could have finished their studies.
So in the last few months since this happened, the students have seek sanctuary at a local church here. Which day have they been ordered to leave Canada?
Well, it has been very difficult for them for seeking the sanctuary and wherever they are, because the expectation is that the government will listen to their plea. They are crying, they are asking for the government to hear them, to help them, and allow them to finish their studies, because it is a Canadian degree is highly priced, and therefore they feel, obviously, like any one of us, they are quite disadvantaged. They can't continue with their studies at the moment, and they are appealing that the government allows them, because they have covered quite a lot in their studies. Mm-hmm. And if they can be able to finish, that will be appreciated.
Yeah.
So how are the girls coping now that they have been in hiding since June? And how are they coping now with staying in the space and not being able to go to school and continue their studies?
Well, it's only this term that they have not been able to go there to their classes. They were in class during some spring summer term, and they did their studies well. But since the beginning of the term, they feel they are quite they are quite low in spirit. They are praying that something can be done so that they can resume their studies. But they are, I understand, they are keeping strong, and they are doing the best they can at the present time.
So there's a few things that are happening right now to help the students out. There's a petition that's been circulating around the city, and also there is a couple of rallies being held in Regina, and there's another rally being held in Ottawa. Could you give us a little more insight on that?
I think the community's response has been very impressive, and this is an area that I have been involved in one way or another. And the first thing has been the kind of a setup of a conduct group, which I have been participating, called the Regina Public Interest Research Group. And there are many other groups that are involved in this particular organization. It's a group of concerned Regina community members. We have had other organizations that are really participating very actively, and they are including particularly also professors at the University of Regina, and there are petitions that have been prepared to that effect. And I think efforts have been made to raise as many signatures as possible. Over 1,000 signatures had been raised in the last few weeks. So that has been one of the efforts that the community is making, mm-hmm. and asking for people to sign up to those petitions. The petitions are going to the Minister for Citizenship and Immigration and the Minister for Public Safety. And the petitions are asking these ministers to allow, on compassionate grounds, to allow these students complete their studies. The other area that Regina again is also involved was a few weeks ago, there was a kind of a demonstration downtown to raise the awareness over the plight of these two students. At the same time, there has been meetings at the University of Regina. There was one on Monday, and there will be another one again on Monday, coming Monday, at the University of Regina again. Again, this is to ask Regina people to support these students and ask and plead with the government to allow them, to allow Victoria and Feva resume their studies. There has also been a rally that is scheduled on Monday in Ottawa. And again, this again to ask the government again to reconsider its decision to deport these students and allow them complete their studies, particularly given that these are young girls. Canadian government is known to promote girl-child education, and particularly in Africa and developing countries. And we have here in Canada two girls that want to advance their studies. But for only working for 10 days to 14 days, basically not more than 2 weeks, we are, the government is sending away these young girls. Now, it sorts of basically appears to be less of a contradiction, because the government of Canada is known worldwide to promote girl-child education. If they can allow these girls to finish their studies, it will be a big boost for girl-child education support in Nigeria. The other point that we need again to note here is that Canada's Canada government is committed to the Millennium Development Goals. Two things for the Millennium Development Goals is to support women education or universal education by 2015. It also calls for women empowerment. Education for women is a bridge towards empowering women. These girls are those women that we talk about. And therefore, if they have to be, if the education has to be cut short without any kind of anticipation that they will resume their studies, might be a too harsh judgment for these girls, and it will be disempowering women. Again, there are very few women in Nigeria that are at, you know, have degrees, right? These girls have been struggling. They have done their best, and therefore it might be important for the Canadian government, for the two ministers concerned, to rescind their decision and allow these girls complete their studies and go back to Nigeria with their degrees.
Now, while we're on this topic, is this issue going to hurt student relations with Nigeria? You mentioned there are 200 students who attend school at the University of Regina. Is this going to make students feel that maybe they should choose a different place to go to school?
Well, it could be a situation where students may feel the same, or even parents may feel the same, because the issue will obviously filter down somewhere, even Nigeria. And therefore, people may again ask, why send our students, our children to Canada, where after they have done innocently a mistake, because the offense they are accused of basically is a minor offense. It is more like jumping red lights, or maybe when traffic lights are yellow, you cross over. So it's a kind of an error. It's a kind of an omission. It was an oversight, as far as I'm concerned, on their side. Now, people may obviously ask, we have sent our children to Canada, right? They mistakenly do a job for 10 days. Huge amounts of money have been spent in terms of tuition, in terms of air tickets. An air ticket from Canada to Nigeria would be no less than $2,000 Canadian. Right? That is a huge amount of money. It is almost a course, a full pay for a course. Now, if you have to pay an air ticket to come from Nigeria to study here, and after making such a minor mistake, you are sent back, you have to pay another over $2,000 Canadian. I think it is a huge amount of money. And parents will ask, maybe, is it worth it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, we've just about reached the end of our first half hour.
in time for a break, and we're going to play a little music, and we'll come back and discuss this very important issue in a few minutes.
Tell me why the grass was greener years ago. I swear it used to grow here, but no more here. Tell me why on this hill all the birds they used to come to fly here, come to die here. And tell me why I need to know. Sometimes I wish I didn't have to know. Are you showing me? Hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day or two? Don't give up on me, I won't give up on you. Just believe in me like I believe in you. Tell me why on the corner all the kids that used to come to run here load their guns here. And tell me why it's okay to kill in the name of the gods we pray. Tell me who said it's okay to die in the name of the lies we say. Tell me why there's child soldiers. Tell me why they close the borders. Tell me how to fight disease. And tell me now, won't you please? The only thing I want to do is to be in the arms of someone who believes in me like I believe in you. And I say, hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day? Hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day? Hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day or two? Don't give up on me, I won't give up. And I try for you. Don't give up on me. And I cry for you. Just believe in me like I believe. Hey world, what you say? Hey world, what you say? Hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day? Hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day or two? Don't give up on me, won't give up on you. Just believe in me like I believe in you. Don't give up on me. Hey world, what you say? Hey world, what you say? Hey world, what you say? Hey world, what you say?
Welcome back to our show. We're going to continue with our guest, Joseph Mabru. Joseph, so we wrapped up touching on the girls' education. So what will happen now to them if they're forced to leave the country?
Well, I think the process is that once they are required to eventually leave the country, they have an opportunity of reapplying for a visa to return and continue with their studies after a given period of time. But the situation is that they confront basically some two challenges. Will they get a return visa to continue with their studies because again, there is a process that has to be followed, and that can be, maybe the visa can be denied or it may be granted. Now, this is something that maybe one may not want to take chances about because you have spent too much time in your schooling and you have spent too much money on your education. So as to whether the visas will be granted again, that is not something that is 100% guaranteed. The other thing is the fact that they have been receiving some support for their tuition, for paying for their tuition here from what is called the River State Sustainable Development Agency. Now, just to mention something a bit of this particular agency, is the fact that it focuses on very, very poor people. It pays for the tuition for very, very poor people, and especially the youth in Nigeria. At the same time, the River State Sustainable Development Agency focuses on River State. Now, we need to understand the way in which Nigerian state is organized. It's organized in various states, as there are about 36 states. Now, the River State area has been one of the areas considered to be very deprived, or rather not very well developed. Now, this is the reason why the River State Sustainable Development was established around 2007. Now, there had been a lot of riots before then and protests in the 1990s because of the way the area was underdeveloped and people were asking for more attention. Now, the River State Agency was established as a result of that with one objective, among others, to build human capacity. Now, as much as about 60% of its budget goes towards developing of human capacity. Now, they are training hundreds of their youth people all over the world. Fever and Victoria are part of that program. Sent these students to Canada, where there is stability in education institutions. It is guaranteed that they will finish their training within 4 years and go back to Nigeria and build the River State area. So there is a lot of money that these agents have spent. Now, the question here is, will this funding that they have been receiving be available 1 year down the line after they go back? So again, that is not something that we can say 100% sure that it will be automatic. Once you come back, we shall send you back to Regina University to continue with your education. So that is how important it is for the ministers for immigration here in Canada and public safety to allow these girls to basically continue with their studies rather than having them, forcing them to go back in Nigeria, because their return is not guaranteed, let's be honest. And rather than maybe proceeding on uncharted terrain, the Canadian government is known for its compassion. It's known for its great human values, and one of those values is offering forgiveness to someone who has committed an error, as these girls have done.
Joseph, you mentioned that it's not 100% certain if Victoria and Feva would be given a visa back to come to Canada. Would they be able to attend university in Nigeria if they can't come back?
Again, that is another very gray area. Because again, it will mean looking for funding, because they come from poor families. Their families are not well off to sometimes meet the cost of university education. So what is happening here is that they may not be likely also, or rather it's not guaranteed really, that they will be able to continue with their studies in Nigeria. They would wish, but again, where will the funding come from? And I think that is a core area. Now, when individuals have got some funding of this nature, particularly from developing countries, it is a very rare opportunity. Those countries are struggling with the various budgetary provisions to finance a huge amount of areas for development. So they have no money that is lying idle somewhere where they can move money from this budget item to this particular activity or reallocate funding in that context. So the most crucial thing is that is whether these girls will be able to continue having the support they have been receiving.
So in the worst case scenario that doesn't happen and they have to go back to Nigeria, you mentioned they would have to seek funding there as well. But what kind of education would they receive in Nigeria compared to what they're getting here in Regina?
I think that is a big issue. Again, Canadian education is highly valued. Canadian degree is highly valued worldwide. And the Canadian education that they are receiving cannot be compared with education from other jurisdictions. Of course, Nigeria is a developing country, and as any other developing country, some of its resources are overstretched. You are talking about provision of various resources, teaching education resources, for example, textbooks, access to internet, for example, highly trained professors, for instance. So all these things do count. So that becomes a little bit of a tricky situation because they have these facilities here, and that is why the government of Nigeria sent them over here, because of the high-quality education they will get here. And therefore, if they go back to the very kind of education system that the government of Nigeria wanted to kind of up in one way or another by enabling them to earn more skills while they are here, so that kind of education level or quality may not be as good as the education level that they would have attained here in the University of Regina. Now, just to mention one other thing, in the case that they go back, we are saying they may not be able to continue with their studies, probably. That's the likelihood. They may not be able, they may not be sure with the new visa. That could be a likelihood also. How will they end up? Now, let us remember, as many as 70%, the highest data that we have of Nigerians is that about 70% live below the poverty line, right? You are talking of a population of over 100 million, right, living below the poverty line. Now, that is very serious, because if these girls go back to Nigeria without any degree, we are basically condemning them into a life of poverty, because they will join that category of people without university degree, right? They will be employed as, you know, using their grade 12 sort of, or secondary school kind of certificates. So they may not be able to move on in their employment situation. Now, so that becomes a tricky thing. At the same time, we know that every year that a girl spends in education basically improves their well-being, their incomes, their empowerment. Now, if they lose, as it could be, all the years they have spent training here, which will not be recognized, and maybe they don't proceed with their education, then it means that they will remain poor, and the number of most empowered women in Nigeria will have reduced by two.
I just want to clarify something here. Now, the girls do already have 3 years of university education, but
yes,
they haven't been able to complete their degree. So even though they have that education, will they still be falling below the poverty line when they go back because they haven't actually completed their degree?
Exactly. Because if they go back without a degree certificate, they will be employed under their last level of education that they had reached. So if it was grade 12, for example, that is a certificate they will use, and they will be employed under that circumstances. No one will say, well, you are in university for 3 years, so maybe you have some... the most important thing is where is the degree certificate that you got. If you don't have that, it doesn't really count. It's a previous certificate. So that means they will be earning very little amount of money, right? Secondly, their progression in careers will be dramatically affected because they may not be able to rise up in their own in their own careers on a grade 12 or rather whatever grade that Nigeria has at that level, secondary school level, that they had attained previously.
Now, talking about women in general in Nigeria, do they have equal access to men to go to university and get a post-secondary education?
Well, at policy level, yes. The Nigeria has been promoting that particular aspect. But remember, there are also cultural issues that come to play. So it does not sometimes matter whether the national policy talks about access to education for everyone. There will be other consideration. There are certain cultures that will always prefer boys to move on as opposed to girls. If you look much of the literature that we have, say for example, in part of northern Nigeria, for example, very few years ago, you'll find a class where you have probably 3-4 girls in a class or in a school that has 100 plus students, right? So, and the data has that only probably 20% of the women population are literate, right? So you have a huge number of women who have not accessed education, as it were. At the moment, you are talking about close to over 5 million, as much as 7 million children who have not gone to school in Nigeria. A huge proportion of that number are basically girls. Now, remember also that close to 70%, right, of Nigerians would live below the poverty line. Now, so poverty comes to a play when it comes for a family to decide who to pay for college education. Normally, boys will be favored in that context. So so the policy will be there, but there are other dynamics that sort of deter women or girls to proceed in their own to proceed in education. There has been areas where some states have made education for girls mandatory by law, and only when that became an issue of law did the number of girls basically rise. But that has not been reflected across the board.
So it's slowly improving, I guess, what you're saying, right?
It's kind of improving, but again, it is a long, long way to go. It's a long shot. And so to see girls that have, like Victoria and Favour, that are here in our university here, and they are being forced to go back, you are talking of basically reducing the number of girls that are educated in Nigeria. And I think that is the most shocking or rather disturbing area, given the fact that the error they committed was not something that one could categorize as extremely serious. Anyone would basically feel if these girls were involved in drugs, it's a different scenario. If they murdered anybody, it's a different scenario. If they were robbed anybody by violence means, it's a different scenario. If they're involved in prostitution, it is a serious crime. But let's be honest, this is a situation where someone has gone to get a honest earning, something that will build the economy of Canada. It's a mistake, yes, and we don't condone that kind of a mistake. But given that nature of error or a crime they committed, by working for 10 days, it calls for a rethink, whether in terms of forgiving these young girls or even looking at the law itself. Could there be a provision of maybe a penalty, right? Say, for example, okay, you worked, we are going to penalize you $1,000 Canadian dollars or $500, rather than basically terminating the studies of a student, and especially these being girls. Secondly, considering the cost of education that they have incurred up to now, the air tickets that they have to pay, and also the possibility that this is the end of their education career.
So now, I'm sure the girls are aware of the fact that they're this, I don't want to say it's a stark future they're going back to, that they will be below the poverty line. What are their thoughts on that and the situation they're going to be forced to go back to? Are they scared? Are they afraid? Are they...
They are extremely scared. And they are extremely worried. One, because all the hopes they had has basically appears to be coming to an end. They looked forward to a time when they would be celebrating their attaining their degree. That again is disappearing, right? At least up to this point in time. Now, the stark reality also that they are confronting when they go back to Nigeria, there are many things. They are going to join the class of the of those people that cannot get good work, right, with a future to look forward to. They are looking, again, they are seeing a situation where they would have to sort of feel embarrassed. They came to Canada to look for, to get a degree. They are going back empty-handed, without anything, to their families, to their neighbors, to those who know them. Remember also the way some societies are organized. These are not girls, you would say, they basically belong to their, they look at their father and their mother and brothers and sisters as a small family. You are talking about a situation where the whole village knows that they came to Canada to study. Their clans, right, they have been looking, towards them for greater support, right, when they get back with their degrees. It's going to be, they feel that a huge number of people, a very large number of people, their families, their neighbors, their extended families, their clans, really are feeling the whole pain, not just even for these girls. And I have had the chance once in a while when the father of one girl's phoned, and it was very, he was feeling very disheartened. He was asking, help my girl, help my daughter to finish her studies, because the reality is, if she comes back, we don't know what we are going to do next.
You just mentioned the girls being embarrassed to go back. Will it affect their self-worth, would you say, to know that they weren't able to accomplish what they came here to do?
They will be, their self-esteem will not be as good as when they would have gone back with a Canadian degree, with a degree from University of Regina. So they will feel they are worthless in large part.
So how do the girls feel about the support that they've received so far here in Canada?
I think they are very impressed, and they are asking that friends, the Regina community, the university community, and all organizations help them to talk to the government, because as they are, they may not be able to do anything much. They may not be able to phone the minister. They may not be able to talk to the high authorities. And they are asking that we continue supporting them. And they are very impressed, and they would like to say thank you very much. I think in our last meeting, they had sent a message thanking everybody that is supporting their cause.
And on Monday, there's going to be a rally here in Regina to support the girls. Could you give us a bit of information about that?
Yeah, there will be a meeting again on coming Monday at the University of Regina. And everyone is welcome. The meeting is open to the members of Regina community, to the students, to the professors, to everybody else who would like to join them. We are discussing, looking at the various options that obviously in these meetings that we need to do to employ, to deploy so as to talk with the relevant authorities. There are issues that are coming up, not just again for this particular student, there are other wider issues dealing with the various changes in the immigration law, and therefore those again are being highlighted. But the main thing is to, you know, discussing ways that these girls can be supported. At the same time, during these meetings and the ones that will be there again on Monday, we shall be signing again more petitions, send postcards that have been printed again, and people are very much welcome to share their ideas, raise questions, and sign those petitions and postcards.
So what can, just to wrap things up here, what will people gain? I mean, they hear about these rallies. What are they really going to gain from this to know that how important it is?
I think there are many things that are really coming up, and it's also is a point where, a forum where some form of public awareness and profile is being raised over various issues, and people will be able to know about the various issues that are affecting these students and others. One last thing I needed to mention basically is the fact that these students have incurred a lot of money. We are talking of about something close to 100,000 or thereabout. Of course, not less than $60,000 that have been paid towards the education. Would this really go to waste?
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us in studio this noon hour. We've really appreciated it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me in the studio.
Yes, this has been wonderful. And before we close this week's Human Rights Radio, I have to say thanks, Regina. Your generous support has made Radiothon 2012 another great success. And if you haven't already done so, please make sure to honor your pledge before Friday, November 2nd. Grand prize draw for trip for two to the Mayan Riviera and Sunquest, courtesy of Carlson Wagenly Record Travel and Sunquest Vacations, will be held live on the air at 5 p.m. on Friday, November 2nd. If you didn't make a pledge, you still can do it. You can pledge online at www.cjtr.ca. Thank you very much for your support from all of us at Regina Community Radio. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."